हेलो
Hello.
हेलो क्लार्क
Nice job.
जेरोम फ्रॉम फ्रांस। हाउ आर यू डूइंग?
Yeah, very good. How are you?
फाइन थैंक यू। आर यू सेफ फ्रॉम द कोविड?
Yeah, well, yes, trying to be safe. How about you?
या माय मी टू। आई एम ट्राइंग टू नॉट टू बी इन ऑन द रॉन्ग साइड
Yeah,
ऑफ दिस
absolutely.
पेंडेमिक।
Yeah, it's very
इट्स
difficult. Well, I hope you stay that way, Jerome. I hope I stay that way as well.
थैंक यू, थैंक यू सो मच। सो बैक इन 1988 एंड योर फर्स्ट एल्बम टर्न बैक द क्लॉक, हाउ डिड यू डील विद द बिग सक्सेस? वाज इट इजी और समथिंग टफ?
I don't think it was difficult because we had worked for many, many years to achieve that. And in a way, we have to remember that being a musician in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and the 50s was very different to being a musician now. You know, music was not considered another form of entertainment. Music was its own universe. Entertainment was comedians and dancers and shows, and music wasn't that. Well, now music is just the same as everything else. It's just a competing form of entertainment. So I think that for young musicians, they have to accept willingness to become celebrities if they want to succeed. But when I was a musician in the 80s, you didn't have to become a celebrity. You could be fairly enigmatic and incognito. And I think in some way, you know, there was no social media. There was, you didn't know much about the
Yeah, for
musicians
sure.
you were into. Yeah. So there was nothing really frightening about it. It just seemed extremely exciting that this concept that, you know, I could reach a lot of people through my songs all around the world. That seemed like an amazing concept to me.
And when you wrote Shattered Dreams, did you know that you had a potential future hit single?
Well, I think that, like many songwriters, I need external input to let me know if I'm on the right track. I don't mean I need people to write with me. I usually write on my own, but you kind of need someone to listen and go, "That's really good," because I come up with so many ideas. Sometimes I don't know. In the case of Shattered Dreams, I wrote it at the home where I grew up. My parents' home, and my dad was the first person to hear me singing it because I was writing it in the room of the house. And he was a successful jazz musician, and he came in one day whilst I was working on it, and he just said,
Oh,
"What's
great.
that? What's that song?" And I said, "It's called Shattered Dreams." And he went quiet, and then he said, "I think you've written your first hit." So that gave me confidence. Then Mike and Calvin, from the original lineup of Johnny Hates Jazz, said the same thing. Most other people thought it would be a complete failure, though. Most people in the music business thought it would be a complete failure, and fortunately, they were wrong.
And I have to say that I've danced in clubs in the 80s on it, because different versions of Shattered Dreams and I Don't Want to Be a Hero were available in remixes and extended version. Did you decide to propose this kind of version, or was it a choice of the major?
It was kind of both, because it's just something you did back then. You know, if you were to release a single, you usually released an extended mix. You know, we called it a 12-inch version, a 12-inch mix, because of course the vinyl records, as they were back then, were either 7 inches wide or 12 inches. I don't know what that is in centimeters anymore, I'm afraid. I'm talking the old-fashioned measurements here. Yeah, you did a 12-inch remix, or a dance mix, and And so we were all prepared to do that. I mean, even Turn Back the Clock, which is a slow song, had a 12-inch mix, which you could play in clubs. So it wasn't really that we had to have a discussion with the labels or they needed to hear from us. It was just something that we naturally did. But I think the extended versions of the songs from the Turn Back the Clock album were really good. They were some of the best ones.
Yeah, for sure. And your fresh style is perfect since your debut. Is that a part of your English education to show you and the band very clean on TV and during the live shows?
I don't know if it was part of an English education. I mean, I did wear, you know, suits and ties always.
Yeah.
You know, I would, people knew me for arriving in any situation wearing a suit and tie. So this is before Johnny Hates Jazz. So, and I think part of that came from a style. We've got to remember that music and fashion back then were very closely linked. You know, music was a cultural movement. It belonged to a social movement of the time, and that included fashion. So they, you know, nowadays fashion, to be honest, is really a high street thing. It's something that you look at online. But back then, you know, the big designers were closely related to the big artists. And so, you know, I wore Armani and all kinds of things, Gaultier. And that was something that really came out of, I think, David Bowie, maybe a bit Robert Palmer.
The kind of a dandy.
Yeah, except dandy, I think the dandy, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. The dandy style is kind of a bit, I think it was cooler than the dandy style. I think it was very high fashion. And and it was a look that, you know, was really, it came out of the new romantic world. I mean, you think about David Sylvie as an example, always dressed really well. And that all had an influence on me, and I always liked that kind of look, so that's the one I went for.
And when you left the band in 1988, was it because you needed a break after all these successes?
I think there were numerous reasons, and I was young when I left the band.
Yeah.
You know, I'm quite a bit older and a little bit wiser now, so I probably would have advised the young Clark to make a different decision. But I think one of the things that worried me was that in the UK, Johnny Hates Jazz were seen as a teenagers group. And in other parts of the world, that wasn't the case. We were seen as kind of like a pop Steely Dan. You know, we were classed differently. And I was really worried by the teenage side of it. It's not that that's wrong, but if that's all there is, I thought that was potentially dangerous for my musical career. And so I decided that I couldn't change that. That was the course the band were on, and I decided to leave because I didn't want to go down that path.
And when you were back with Mike Nocito with the album Magnetize, can I say that this album is a kind of transition for the band and his music between the past and his future?
Yeah, absolutely. That's well said, Jerome. Well said. And we knew it was going to be that. The song, the title song, Magnetized, which was the first single from that album, was very much I wrote that to be a bridge for the people who used to love Johnny Hates Jazz from the 80s. And the sound of then, which was 2013. And I think it works. Actually, I have really good feelings about that album. I think it took the band in a very natural direction. It sounded like Johnny Hates Jazz, but we were just more mature. And and I think it really worked. Of course, we didn't know what was to come. We didn't know that we were going to head towards the sound that we have now. But I think that perhaps in some ways it was preparing us to do that, yeah.
In 1980s, you decided to reinvent the famous Turn Back the Clock with an unplugged version. You are a singer, and I would like to know if it's more difficult, maybe this is something that demands a preparation, to place your voice on an acoustic version?
Well, in a way it is, because your voice is more exposed in an acoustic version. But on the other hand, you know, when I wrote the songs, I wrote them sitting at a piano. And so I was originally used to playing them acoustically. We then had to turn them into records. So I just had to get back into the space of being the songwriter again and just remembering how it felt when I originally wrote those songs and how I sang them. But that said, Jerome, you know, as you get older, I think you become more and more critical of what you do as an artist. And so when I was younger, I was still critical, but, you know, I sounded the way I sounded. It was just as simple as that. When you get older, you kind of you need to find almost a deeper voice inside yourself. I don't mean sonically deeper, but maybe spiritually deeper. And interestingly, doing the 30th anniversary edition of Turn Back the Clock, especially the acoustic versions, allowed that to happen. It allowed me and Mike to find a kind of a more evolved way of interpreting the songs. And it was actually quite hard to record the whole thing. We've become so familiar with the recorded versions, with the full studio recordings, that it was hard to kind of hear them in a different way. But I think it worked really well.
Yeah, sure. And so Johnny is jazz, but in this acoustic session, we can find some song like Heart of Gold in a jazz version.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I said earlier, Jerome, my father was a very successful jazz musician. So yeah. I actually grew up in a house full of Nat King Cole, Count Basie, Ella Fitzgerald, Sinatra, Duke Ellington. I mean, I absorbed jazz since I was a kid. And interestingly, none of us in the band disliked jazz. It was just a name referring to a guy who wasn't even in the group. Johnny is actually Mike's brother-in-law, and he really does hate jazz. But so when it came to Heart of Gold, I was just messing around on the piano, and just it seemed to lend itself to a swing approach. And so, yeah, there is an irony in the fact that we've done a jazz version at long last. There is.
Yeah. And this album is very special for me because we can find a song like Turn Back the Clock, Revisited, with a lot of melancholy, maybe like the song Desperado from the Eagles at the very beginning of the song. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, you're absolutely right, Jerome. I mean, Mike is a big Eagles fan. I love the Eagles. I love Desperado. Actually, it's a beautiful song. And I think that we didn't intentionally reference Desperado, but what we did find was a kind of an Americana in Turn Back the Clock. And that, in a way, makes sense. Mike is from the U.S. I lived in the U.S. for many years. Yeah. And when I wrote Turn Back the Clock, I very much had a U.S. story in my head, which was a story called The Body by Stephen King, which became the film Stand By Me. So the song was always about that story in many ways, inspired by that story. So there's something interesting that we found a voice for the land where that story is from in this new version of Turn Back the Clock. And you hear the voice of that land very much in Desperado. I think that's the connection.
And the version of Listen is so romantic. I can listen to this album during a full day because you can find inside it so many different feelings. This is really a great work.
Thank you, Jerome. Yes, well, Listen is, it was the only song on Turn Back the Clock that was, well, there were two songs that weren't written by me. I wrote all the other ones. But Listen was written by a guy called Phil Thornalley, who went on to replace me when I left Johnny Ace Jazz. And and so, in some ways, it was an opportunity for me to make that song more personal to me. And and I think because me and Mike have performed a lot of these songs acoustically over the years, we already had kind of worked it out. And it works well live, and it works well on the recording. Yeah.
And in 2020, you recorded two new versions of Shattered Dreams and I Don't Want to Be a Hero with a slower version than the first one for I Don't Want to Be a Hero. If I'm right, maybe?
Well, it certainly may feel a bit slower. I don't think in reality it is. But
it's an impression.
It's interesting, Jerome, because when I wrote the song, the original demo was much slower. I don't know if you know the song Body Talk by Imagination. It was that kind of speed. It was really quite slow. It was a dance track, but when we did the recording, for some reason, we sped it up. And I think that none of us were originally very happy with that recording. It was my favorite song on the album, but the recording never didn't quite get it right. So when we re-recorded it recently, it's a really cool version. I actually prefer it to the original. I'm glad you like it. Cool.
And you are back with Wide Awake. This brand new album is full of happiness, California groove like Spirit of Love, Greater Good, Wide Awake, Free, and we can find some guitars in New Day Ahead. Is it something, a kind of touch from the Johnny Ace Jazz from the 80s with the song Love the Light, No Mistakes? It's a kind of a bunch of each faces of the new Johnny Ace Jazz.
Yeah, maybe that's a good way to look at it. I mean, No Mistakes was the first song that was written for that album. So I very much, naturally wanted to write a song that was kind of like magnetized on the previous album. That was a song that would embrace, the original Johnny Ace Jazz fans. And certainly that's become one of the most popular songs from that album. But I've always been a chameleon as a writer, and that has its positives and negatives. one of the things with Johnny Ace Jazz was it forced me to write in a certain way. But when it came to Wide Awake, I mean, me and Mike had talked for quite some time about the idea of just doing an album where we allowed ourselves to be influenced by the music that we grew up listening to in the 70s. And that's why you hear these or you see these different phases of Johnny Ace Jazz, because we're really kind of showing a little more about ourselves personally. I mean, Spirit of Love is a kind of a 70s soul song. And that's because we grew up listening to that kind of music. Or New Day Ahead, which is the environmental song of the album, is a glam rock song. And you're quite right. It's guitar heavy. But that's just because that's part of us and part of what influenced us. And we kind of like the idea of trying to do that in a way that was still part of the Johnny Ace Jazz sound. So it's a multifaceted album, this one.
So you find a different kind of inspiration in the U.S., correct?
I don't know. Perhaps because we listened as kids to, a lot of music from the U.S. That's probably the main reason. Whereas when I was younger, I was very much an electronic musician. I mean, I was very much oriented towards synths, and that was very much a kind of a British sound. But perhaps because we allowed ourselves that influence, we reached back into artists like, you know, the Isley Brothers or Stevie Wonder or whoever, you know, to find that influence. And so perhaps that's why you hear a kind of a U.S. sensibility there.
You are personally involved in many causes around the planet about the global warming, the ecology. This is important for you. But everything is about to be released this year, so it makes sense can you tell us more about these causes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my awareness of the destruction that the natural world is facing by humanity really came about in the 80s. And there was obviously a growing awareness that, you know, came from the 50s and 60s all the way through. But as I traveled the world with Johnny H. Jazz, promoting and touring, you know, I could see that every different country, even though everyone thought of themselves as different, you know, because they were a different nationality and a different language and a different culture and all this stuff, we all had one thing in common, and that was that we were all facing the same environmental challenges. And I could see, like a lot of people could see, obviously, that this was going to get worse. So this was, you know, decades before Greta Thunberg appeared and the school strike protest started, which thank goodness they have, by the way. And I wanted to, it was another reason I'd moved away from Johnny H. Jazz, is that I wanted to write about what we were doing to the planet through my music. And the album I released after leaving Johnny H. Jazz, which was called Rain Dance, had some, beginning to have some environmental focus. And then I did other work through the 90s, and then an album called Tomorrow in 2007, which was completely focused on the environment. And at the same time, I was part of starting the what has become the most important environmental awards ceremony in Europe, called Green Tech. And I performed the first Green Tech Awards. I was given an award myself, which was very, very kind of them. I still don't think I deserved it, but I think that the reason I care is that I very much love this planet. I mean, I love nature. I love trees. I love wildlife. I love rivers. I love all the things that to me are
animals,
what makes life so
yeah.
special. Yeah, animals, exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Very much animals.
Huh.
And so, you know, I come at it from a place of love. I really do love our planet, and it pains me that we're doing what we're doing to it. It's not just a question of statistics for me. Statistics are important, but it's much more, I'm much more emotionally involved in that. So it's something that I'm going to carry on being involved in. And then I mentioned the new Johnny H. Jazz album has a song on it called New Day Ahead, which is, you know, very much a song about what we're doing to the planet. And I'm going to continue writing about that subject until hopefully I don't need to anymore.
Because listening music is complicated in 2020. If we want to that the industry makes the lower possible impact on the planet, because we listen it on with CDs, vinyls, this is plastic, or via streaming company, and so we use a lot of energy, a lot of electricity, by example. Can we think about a better way to listen to the music for the planet for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that it's evolving right now. For me, streaming is going to be the future, but we have to fix the financial side of streaming. I mean, I know a lot of people have been talking about this, but most artists, you know, earn literally nothing from streaming. Streaming is a situation where the winner takes it all. And so the major labels, all three of them, just take all the money from streaming. So it's not a democratic situation. This idea of the democratization of music hasn't happened. In actual fact, it's got worse because of streaming. But that needs to be fixed so that young musicians, independent musicians, can be paid in the same way they're paid when their record is played on radio. So that will help. But I actually think that people still like physical product. I still do. And you're quite right, Jerome, that the production processes for CDs and vinyl is terrible.
For sure.
Even though they're sold in small quantities now. So I think we need to look at recycled vinyl. I think that is a very promising technology.
Oh.
And I know it is being used more and more. There was a time when recycled vinyl didn't work, but the processes are much better now. So we can go for high quality recycled vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows, maybe we can even for CDs if CDs survive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the long run, we've got to think about how we generate power. So no matter what we do, we're generating it from a renewable and safe source. And nothing is perfect. You know, wind power is not perfect because of the impact that the turbines have on wildlife. But it's better than nuclear power, and it's better than coal, and it's better than natural gas. So we've got to move towards that, and obviously towards solar. I'm personally very, very interested in nuclear fusion, which is, you know, cold fusion. That's the type of nuclear power we've not yet achieved on a large scale. Right now, we depend on nuclear fission. And nuclear fission is highly dangerous, generates terrible amounts of highly toxic waste product, whereas nuclear fusion won't. So that's something that is very interesting for the future. I also think, if I may, because you have asked me the question, Jerome, and this is not directly related to music, but I am not a fan of electric cars. Electric cars are going to take a huge amount of power to keep them charged, power that we can only generate through nuclear fission and coal power and the like. And the components are, very destructive. I mean, we're still dependent upon components that involve predominantly child labor from different parts of the world. It's appalling. So I think we need to be heading towards hydrogen. Hydrogen is the future for motorized travel. And therefore, when we listen to music in our cars, we will be generating it in a much cleaner way, and in a way that is, just creates less human misery, basically, in how these things are produced. So there you go. That's my vision of the future.
And another kind of vision. What is your point of view about these crazy days we all live, the COVID, Trump? We have to reinvent a new kind of life. What are the solutions for you?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Jerome. Your questions are very good. I appreciate them a lot.
Thanks.
No, they are. Look, I think, you know, COVID and Trump are two different things. and Trump is just a symbol of populism. And there are, populist leaders all around the world. We've got one
here
in government over here right now. You know, I can't stand them. But they came to power for a reason. We've got to understand that they came to power because people have felt, I think, that globalization has not worked for them. So they've gone to people who have said, well, I will stand up for you and I will stand up for your country and your rights as a national of that country. So, you know, Donald Trump was very, very much put the U.S. first, America first. Boris Johnson was all about Brexit. But, you know, they're not the worst people on the planet. I mean, we only have to look at Putin and Jing and Kim Jong-un in North Korea. There are some serious, Bolsonaro in Brazil, we've got some serious problems with leadership in the world.
Yeah. So, dangerous.
It is dangerous. Yeah. And so I think the ways around that is I still believe that we need to work together much more whilst appreciating that the capitalist world that we've created really only rewards a very, very small group of people. It has to work for everyone in a much better way. And I have to say, that means that we're going to need a higher degree of socialism in the capitalist system that we operate. So that's one thing. I do think we need to move away from the right and head towards a center-left approach around the world. I think, though, that COVID is a much more alarming thing than Trump. COVID is a result, if the scientists are correct, which I think they are, of humanity going into the last wild places on the planet, interacting with the wildlife there, and the viruses that exist, the pathogens that exist within different species, that can exist within them without causing any damage to that species, have jumped to humans.
And eating bats?
Exactly, like eating bats. To put it crudely, you're quite right, Jerome. What happened in China? It's heavy. If that is the reason, but scientists have been warning us about this for ages. It's not just what we consume; it's how wildlife has to come into populated areas to survive, because we're destroying their natural habitat, and they bring with them pathogens that are incredibly dangerous to us, but not dangerous to them. So basically, this is, I think, the Earth telling us, stop what you are doing. You've got to protect the places, the last places where wildlife and rare species can continue to exist without the threat of human destruction. So what does that mean? It means also that we've got to move away from a purely capitalist model of how we interact with the planet. We've got to put environmental protection first, as we need to put, you know, the protection of children first, and we need to put equality between the genders first. You know, all these things are important, but I think we've really got to start with the planet, because without a planet, it doesn't matter how equal we are in other terms, we're not going to be here. So, this is COVID's been a real wake-up call, and I really think the media needs to focus more on the reasons behind it.
And what is your feeling about the Brexit?
I'm very sad about it, Jerome. I mean, it's interesting talking to you. You know, you're still in the EU, and I am no longer. And, you know, what I would say to anyone who's listening within the EU when they think about what happened with Brexit is that 17 million people voted to leave in a country of 66 million. That's not a majority. It was a majority in that referendum, but still 17 million voted to leave, 16 million voted to stay. It's not like this country desperately wanted to leave. So there's a lot of heartbreak over here. Sure, there are people who are happy about it and are feeling better about the future as a result. But I think for a lot of people, especially younger people, they feel like they've lost a family. And I would not be surprised if when those young people grow up, maybe in 10 years' time, they will demand a vote to request to rejoin the EU. I can see that happening. We're going to have to see what happens in the meantime. But what I think is important is that we stay, I mean, forget about trading partnerships. Let's just stay close as a people. We're all still European. We all still have the same history. We share that same history. I mean, you know, our history is, it's a Celtic history. It's a Viking history. It's a Roman history. It's the history of all the peoples who have migrated to Europe, who have now made this their home. And we've got to remember that that's what unites us. And Brexit's been very divisive. And I think I want to get beyond that and to remember that beyond the EU, we are still one family. And it's just these are political and trade decisions that I don't want to affect what exists spiritually between us. Anyway, that's my feeling about it.
And are you still an European man?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm a how can I put it? I'm first and foremost, I'm a human of the earth. You know, the earth is is our joint home. But then going in further, I'm a European without a doubt. And I know it's interesting. I know people who voted for Brexit who still see themselves very much as Europeans. And so it's not, I think, again, anyone in the EU has got to stop thinking about Brexit being a anti-European or some kind of hatred towards Europe. It's not at all. I think there are many mixed feelings and mixed reasons for it. But for me personally, I used to live in Holland. You know, I've spent a lot of time in Europe in my life, and I wrote a song actually, which people will hear eventually on an album later this year, which is called Druid Tree. It eventually became Mother Tree, but the original version was about Europe, was about ancient Europe and what unites us. So I will never stop being a European, and I have to say that I hope that Britain will become part of a transformed EU in the future. I think that would be a very positive thing for everyone.
Yeah. So we have to stay positive to face all these problems. And if the situation comes back to the normal, will we have the chance to see you live on tour in Europe?
I very much hope so, Jerome. Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, and Mike would love to as well. It's something that we really, really want to do. It's so hard right now because last year I remember people were saying, you know, just wait until spring in 2021 and then everything will start happening again. And the fact is, I think it's looking doubtful that anything will happen this year, to be honest, with live music, or maybe very, very small scale. But we've got to, you know, we've got to see this through. I think we need to look towards 2022. I'm going to be doing a songwriting stream on social media starting in February. So that'll be my way to interact with people in a live context. And I think it will need to be that way for quite a while. Yeah.
Okay, so for sure, I pray for all the English people, Irish and Scottish too, during this big disease and bad situation for all the people from the country.
Thank you.
I would like to thank you again very, very, very much for your time and your answers.
And thank you for your time, and thank you for your good questions. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. So stay safe, take care, and I hope to talk to you another time in 2021 to talk about other things.
Thank you very much, Jerome. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Clark.
Okay, au revoir.
Talk to you soon. Okay, au revoir.
Au revoir.
Bye.